University Tower Chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show on which you match wits with the University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and today we are going to dedicate this show to our late host, Professor Kathy Bush, Associate Dean and Professor in the College of Liberal Arts and Education here at UDM, who passed away this last summer. We're going to start by addressing the panel one by one. I guess I'll kick things off myself by telling a story or an anecdote about Kathy. You know, I was a student at the University of Detroit Mercy back in the mid-90s, and I cannot claim to have ever had a class with Professor Bush. As a matter of fact, frankly, our paths never crossed in 4+ years. But I will tell you, this being my 9th year at the university, that the moment I emailed Professor Bush in the fall of 2002 and asked to be a part of this panel, I got an email response within 5 seconds saying, Matt, I know who you are, and I think it would be great, and we can't wait to have you. And I don't know if I've ever met anybody who is more open to immediately liking and loving somebody than Kathy Bush. And there are a great number of colleagues and students around here who are going to miss her dearly at UDM. To my left is Professor Beth Oljar from the Department of Philosophy.
Good to be here, Matt. I will also share an anecdote about Kathy. It was my first year at UDM, and I was kind of, long story short, I was kind of having a rough time. And on one particular Friday afternoon, Kathy was giving me a ride home, and so I came down to the Learning Center, and she said, oh, are you ready to go? How are you doing? And I just burst into tears. I just started sobbing, and she looked at me, and she goes, you need liquor and grease. So we leave campus, and we're in Ferndale, someplace on 9 Mile. I think it was a Chinese restaurant. And so we walk in, and Kathy says to the host, we need liquor and grease. And they didn't serve alcohol in this particular establishment that we first went to. And she said, oh, sorry, we're leaving. And we literally walked out, went to another place that had liquor and grease. And ever since then, whenever things sort of got too stressful, we would look at each other and say, liquor and grease day. It's time. Let's go.
Absolutely.
Was it China Ruby?
Absolutely.
No, they're not greasy. Are they?
All Chinese food's greasy.
It depends on
but there was no alcohol. That was sort of, immediately turned around and...
Aren't those the two basic food groups in the South?
Mint julep and grits. Yes,
so we exactly. proceeded to have a number of liquor and grease days over the years.
Awesome, awesome. To Beth's left from the Department of Communication Studies is Professor Jason Roach.
Good to be here, Matt. Unfortunately, this is only my 2nd year, and I never had the opportunity to meet Kathy. I've heard many good stories, and I'm glad to be hearing more today.
Thanks, Jason. To Jason's left is Professor Dan Maggio of U.S. First.
Yes. You're going to ask me to share a story?
Anything.
I'll share a quick funny one. We were up north many, many years ago with our crew staying at a cabin on Lake Michigan. Me and her were driving back from the restaurant. She's driving really slow. So I kept bugging her. I'm like, why are you driving so slow? Why are you driving so slow? She goes, there's deer. I said, there's no deer. Before I finished the word deer, one came out and hit her door head on. And when we got back to where we were going, she was so shaken up that she drank, which...
It's always a good thing to do. Liquor and grease, I'm telling you.
Her and deer. Putting on a paper bag and dressing up like a deer and reenacting the accident. And I have several pictures of that.
Oh, Lordy. Oh,
that was one of the funnier stories. Clean, funny stories.
Oh. How did that never come on the air before?
Across the table from me is a professor of history and the interim dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Education, Roy Finkenbein.
Hey, Matt. Kathy and I overlapped for about 13 years here, and I considered her a good friend. One of the things that struck me about Kathy, in addition to her helpfulness and welcoming spirit, was the way she named certain things. And we all know many of them. One of the, I suppose, most poignant at this point is her reference to taking the big dirt nap. And while that would sound just awful for most people to say it, I think Kathy is up there laughing because she finally is taking the big dirt
Indeed.
Nap.
Indeed.
Oh my, I can imagine the lilting laugh right now. Those phrases just used to fall right out of, you know, fall right off the tip of her tongue. Also, to my right, the chair of the Department of Mathematics and Computer Science. I nearly said math education. See, you know, you have this professor title.
There's that too.
Professor Jeff Boats. There's way too many things in that department title.
Yeah, I actually met Kathy for the first time through this show. I used to go out for really long distant walks Sunday mornings, and I would tune into the show. I was a fan of the show before I even realized, catching it in the end credits, that it was taped right here at my own university. So eventually I worked up the nerve to say, could I be on the show? You know, and when I finally met her and we went and we used to tape in that recording studio, right, over on the
Smith Media Center.
Yeah. So we went there for the first time, and it was weird because she had transformed from this creature of legend from radio fame to this ordinary person. And then over the years, she sort of became this creature of legend again in a right. different way. It was sort of a weird transformation.
Sure. Finally, to my immediate right, from the College of Creative Studies in Detroit, Michigan, is Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here. I guess for me it's just kind of weird because technically I'm not UDM, but I've been listening to the show since I was like 10 or 11.
Wow.
You know, I remember like hugging the radio, listening to WNIC at like 10 o'clock on Friday nights. And
WNIC.
Yeah, Kathy was always one of those voices that came across the air, and then after like 500 some questions later, she actually asked me to be, you know, to show up on one of the shows. I was completely blown away, completely floored. I thought it was one of the greatest honors I've had in the last couple of years. And the thing I always remember about Kathy is that when she did that Southern drawl thing, when she'd have a case of the vapors on the air or something like that. That was always that voice. I'm like, where, you know, and then finally meeting her for the very first time, you know, at this table was, you know, like I said, it was one of the, you know, the high points the last couple of years for me. So,
thank you, everybody. We know that all of these stories are very heartfelt, and as I've already mentioned, we're going to miss Kathy Bush very much here at UDM. When last we were on the air, so many, many moons ago, we were talking about questions having to do with history of the country of Canada, a subject that was very close to Kathy's heart. And we left with ill-fated question 13, even though we've been doing very well. What was the name of the accord which gave Quebec constitutional status as a distinct society, and why was this designed?
The Honda Accord.
I was going to say, well, and you stole mine.
It was designed to keep from
Le Traité de Honda
separating, right?
I'm sorry, gentlemen.
It was designed to keep Quebec from leaving.
From separating from the country.
You know, that's not what it says here, but I think that definitely is something indirect. They're explaining why this accord was needed to ease the fear of Québécois, as they would lose their identity at the moment in recent history when English speakers became the majority in the province versus the French. But what was the name of this accord?
The Quebec Accord. That's too obvious.
It was the Meech Lake Accord.
Oh, yes.
Well, that was my next year.
The famous Meech Lake Accord.
Does that make sense? No. All right. Yeah. Professor,
I actually have heard that once.
Yeah. We still have a Canadian history course in the department.
Yes, and it's going to be taught in the winter again.
How appropriate.
Yeah. It's going to be taught by a Brit.
Oh, no.
Oh, my.
Ed Bottomley.
Queen Victoria.
Well, it's part of the Commonwealth. I mean, you know, it's getting it closer to home.
Yeah. There's like a required textbook and a required toque.
Everyone canoes in.
We'll finish off our fantastic set of Canadian history questions here with what I thought was the most fascinating question on the list, not knowing much myself. What is the literacy rate in Canada? It's actually a multiple choice question. And your choices are 70%. 85%, 90%, or 97%? And I'm going to go and tell you that these questions were put together in 2002, if that helps people solve things mathematically.
Unless there's been some tremendous change in Canadian literacy.
It's unlikely that a tremendous change would have happened 85. In 8 years. But yeah, let's be,
well, define literacy as reading in one or both languages, or one language specifically?
I believe that the official language of Canada is English. So
no, there are,
I think
97%.
There are two.
It's both.
It's both.
Is it both for the entire country?
I think so. Yeah.
Because if it were only English, it ain't 97%.
They have to take French. Did you take French?
No. I'm a Detroit Public School product.
Oh,
that's right. You came here.
Only in Quebec, right?
So basically, you can't speak English either.
Yeah, I'm not too well.
I'm just remembering that Dan Aykroyd scene from Canadian Bacon where he pulls the truck over and John Candy and Rhea Perlman are fearful because they've got, you know, guns and bombs and all this stuff in the truck. And instead, it's to chastise them because they don't have the anti-Canadian profane graffiti on the side, also written in French.
that was a great movie. It reminds me of one of those wonderful internet memes we get in our inboxes where the very, very, speaking of profane things, profane nicknames for all the 50 states in these United States. But the one for Michigan was our last line of defense versus invasion from Canada. I said, I didn't think that was that bad. You know, I think Michigan got off a little easy there.
Well, it's because we're north of them. You know, we got them surrounded.
Yeah, that's right. That's
Isn't
right.
Quebec the only part of Canada where French is an officially recognized language? This was part of what the accord was protecting, right? It's nationally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, but Quebec, I think French has got to be first.
Yeah.
The rest of Canada's.
But if literacy is one or the other language, I've probably is 97%.
I said 97.
Oh, 97% is correct.
It is.
Wow.
It is a whopping literacy.
But 85% but wasn't specific.
Like the northern parts of Canada, maybe literacy rate would have been.
You know,
no offense to the northern part of Canada. No,
I believe, well, I want to be careful about this. It was the most recent Winter Olympics were in Vancouver. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
I remember, you know, you watch the opening ceremonies while you're like, you know, organizing your database and Rolodex and stuff. But I believe that, let's see if Professor Chow can chime in here. Greater than 70% of the Canadian population lives within 100 miles of the border with the United States.
Correct.
It's this vast disparity in terms of population.
And probably half
right?
of them live in Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver.
Yeah, that's right. That's
or
right.
more. Than
if we added all three of those together, how well would we do?
And Vancouver.
Folks who are listening in, you need to know this. These questions were designed, apparently, in some conjunction by the internet, Professor Vivian Dix and myself. But, you know, you can send questions in, too. Feel free to check out our website or email questions directly to me, miomj@udmercy.edu. I need more things in my inbox, frankly. And
don't we have an Ask the Professor Facebook page, too?
Oh, and we have an Ask the Professor Facebook page, too, if that is your styles. I should point out, it's interesting to hear. Oh, I didn't know. We had an Ask the Professor Facebook page. One of my students alerted me to the fact that Father McNichols, you know, more than 70 years dead, has his own Facebook page.
Oh, my gosh.
He died during the 30s. Yeah. So, you know, very interesting.
But he was responsible for the style of the buildings.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And buying parcels of the Gorky Farm. Out here in the suburbs, it's
was
six
like
mile
a Russian
Main
immigrant
Street.
Base or what? The Gorky Farm.
That's what the history book
that's
says.
That's what the land was called. The wrong
it was
right
the,
now.
It was the Gorky Farm, and it was the burbs. You know, I want to get out of downtown, and now look where we are. Not even at the one quarter point of the entire metro area,
no,
if you think
not.
About it. So, pretty interesting stuff. Well, you know, folks, usually when people send course questions in and we smoke, you know, like we did just a minute ago, I'd say 13 out of 14 is being pretty darn conservative. We'll send you a t-shirt, and if you stump us, you'll get a t-shirt too, or maybe a fantastic new photograph that Professor Maggio is going to work on. And when we think about that picture, we'll take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
I was in a Harmony House yesterday buying a CD, and the clerk, when they took my credit card, asked if I were the guy from Ask the Professor.
Really? Did he give you a discount or a
no,
freebie? Or?
But he asked a lot about George.
Were you in Livonia?
No, I wasn't in Livonia.
Mr. Magnet.
That. Our next set of questions comes from Catherine. Now, this is Ledesma. Is it Leedsma? Or Ledesma,
is
I don't
it
know.
From Grand Rapids?
No, from Crowley, Texas. So,
wow.
I don't know how it's pronounced. I probably mangled it. Anyway. I have finally mustered up the courage and the questions to send to your program.
Good.
I've listened to you for many years and lost you when KHJ changed to K-Earth in Los Angeles.
Ah.
By the time I caught up with you again, Professors George and Sarah had become chairs.
And the rest of us are end tables.
Poor babies.
It's a function of age.
In 1995, I moved from Orange, California to Crowley, Texas. Thank goodness KRRW 97.9 FM has enough class to carry you all.
Hey.
You have helped this 50-year-old blind woman through a difficult adjustment period. Every Sunday night, I hop into bed, put on my earphones, and at midnight, giggle silently under the sheets.
Just don't get caught.
Wish
He's from the neighbors.
Time to get to work. I have chosen some questions on sports, to which I know all or some of you will know the answer.
Oh, so no.
This is our word. Right. Yeah,
since I can't tell the difference between an autograph and a photograph, it doesn't matter to me how many you get right or wrong.
Oh, we'll dig up a keychain.
We'll do something.
We'll find something.
God, we'll come and move your furniture.
I just wanted a chance to star in your show. If my answers are wrong, blame Reader's Digest.
We'll send you a couple of
you
chairs.
You come to Detroit, we'll put you
how
on the show.
How nice that somebody actually cares about
it. That's wonderful.
And we are back with a show dedicated to the late Professor Kathy Bush, former host of this show, Ask the Professor. And we've got some questions, panel, about Irish history.
You know, she used to sneak her own Irish history questions into, you know, sneakily under the alias, what was it, Pat McGroin, I think it was?
No! Oh!
a very Irish name, the McGroin, from the McGroin clan, you know?
You know what? She did.
She did.
You know, she did. You didn't know that was her?
No, but I guess I never caught the reference.
No.
I must not have been paying attention.
Well, these actually are split between 7 questions about Irish history and Irish geography. So we're going to the Emerald Isle all together here, folks. Let's see how much we can cover. We've been doing pretty good with the NHL questions and the Canadian history questions, staying well within. Oh, for some reason, this one says you should be able to answer 10 correctly. Maybe they're harder. I don't know.
Out of
14.
How many Irish Hockey League teams are there?
Well...
What were the original 6? Yeah.
The leprechauns, the shillelaghs,
the banshee.
The cork bottles.
In what year did the Irish Civil War originally break out? Oh, my.
Well, let's see. Sunday Bloody Sunday was 1981.
Well, right? It would have been before that, you're saying.
I believe it was before.
Well, the war album was 82, I think. You too.
Yeah.
Was that a joke?
We got the history.
Guess not.
Civil War that's been going on for much, much longer.
It's been going on for much longer than that, but there was a formal rebellion, much like our Civil War here in the States, and it was during the 1900s.
The Great Disturbance.
So we're not talking the Easter Uprising.
Oh!
I believe we might be. I believe
1916?
We have 1922 here, but I believe the Easter Uprising fed into this.
There was actually a movie... made about that time, and it was actually one that Kathy really liked and that we watched together called The Wind That Shakes the Barley.
Oh, The Wind That Shakes the Barley, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That's actually about that.
Very famous Irish folk song, actually, title.
And that uprising.
Let's try this one. In the 19th century, what was the main language spoken in Ireland in the 19th century?
1800.
Oh, Gaelic?
Yeah, Gaelic, yeah.
Wasn't Gaelic.
Oh.
The Irish weren't allowed to speak that.
English?
It was English. Yeah. It was forced to be English, if I remember my history correctly. And Gaelic is a classic example of a language that's dying, except for enough people know about it and study it that it floats around. It's not like those very far north, Scandinavian languages that are dying out at a rate of 10 a day or whatever because people just don't use or speak them anymore. As a matter of fact, if my recent Irish history is up to date, in the same way that we were talking to Professor Chow about, didn't you have to learn French? I believe all Irish public school children must learn Gaelic. It is part of their curriculum.
Interesting. Yeah?
It's not an easy language to learn if you speak English as a first language. During what years were the Irish potato famine?
1840s.
1845 to 48?
45 to 49. I'll buy it for a dollar.
Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what charitable society was at the forefront of relief for this famine?
Sisters of Mercy.
Oh, it was not the Sisters
of
Mercy.
Oh.
Wonderful band, too.
I think this question is interesting because we're so used to, in the television age, seeing both the disturbance and the relief efforts.
The Red Cross?
Wasn't the Red Cross.
Because I thought they were
a charitable society.
Is it St. Vincent?
No.
Is that Saint
Salvation Army?
Let's see. No. I'll probably give it away if I say this, but I'll throw you guys a bone. You know, if I say oatmeal, you might say
Quakers.
The Quakers. The Friends, as they were called back then.
Friends of the Quakers?
Society of Friends.
The Friends of the Quakers.
It always amused, this is really odd, but it always amused my brother and I. We went to Encyclopedia Britannica and looked down the list of all the famous presidents of the United States, and it had one column for religion, and under Nixon it said friend, and we were like, what the heck does that mean? It didn't say Society of Friends, it just said friend. Like, a friend to who? What does that mean?
Very few, actually. All right. And it didn't include Pat.
Oh my.
Did it include Mojo?
And now our Muslim president, of course, is sending his daughters to a Quaker school. So.
Yes. One of the things that Dr. Sumner, formerly the show, has shared with me, because he's been doing a lot of background reading for this presidential partners course he's doing on presidents and first ladies. Apparently, before Richard Nixon and Pat started dating, he was so enamored with her, he would volunteer to drive her and her dates around places. Wow. Is that like the... It was the weirdest thing you've ever heard.
I believe that's where the phrase third wheel came from, because that's amazing.
There's something really sort of sad and pathetic. Oh, yes.
It's like stuck in 16
There's also something sort of sad and pathetic about Nixon.
Nixon, yes.
He's general. Like, I never imagined him as being like Ducky from 16 Candles.
Yeah, exactly. To where did most Irish emigrate after the famine of the 1840s?
Canada.
U.S.
According
US.
To this, it's the United States, mm-hmm. although okay. I believe close because enough. We share a continent, they got to be
America.
Close.
North America.
There you go.
North
and
America.
They were not really wanted when they came to the United
no.
States.
And absolutely they weren't true. Allowed to open their mosque. No, that's a different
story. That's right. On the sacred ground of the Burlington Coat Factory.
Oh, right next to the strip club.
Right.
Oh, my. On whose tombstone are these words? He is now where fierce indignation can no longer tear his heart.
The Tomb of the Unknown Soldier?
No. We're talking Ireland here, so they might have an unknown soldier.
Is Daniel it an O'Connell? Irish author, Dylan Thomas?
It is a very famous Irish author.
Dylan Thomas as well.
Not
Dylan Thomas. Oh, James Joyce?
James Joyce.
No. Think Gulliver's Travels.
Oh, Jonathan Swift.
Swift. Yes, Swift. Absolutely. Folks.
And the Modest Proposal.
Yeah, exactly. At which Irish shipyard was the great ship Titanic built? She was an Irish ship.
The ironic answer would be Cork.
I didn't even know.
Because they could have used the big one.
It doesn't flow.
Galway? I mean...
No, this was a very famous company in Ireland. Oh. Two names, the second of which is also...
Britannia?
Shared by, a very large wild dog.
Labrador, Bernard,
Wolf.
Yes, it was Harland and Wolf was the name of the shipyard where the Titanic.
I hope that's one of the ones we were not supposed to get.
That is exactly.
We've lost.
Yeah, that's our that's
so
our mulligan.
My wife is one of these Titanic freaks, and my guess is she would have known that. You know, all these little details and what have you. What is the most northerly county in the Republic of Ireland?
What is it? What's the first letter?
D. That should be a good start.
Dundee. Dublin County is
Dublin. Unfortunately,
I can tell you
it's a city.
It's not.
It's three syllables.
Dunleavy.
Well, that's a pretty good guess, but that's incorrect.
And the name of some of Kathy's relatives in Canada.
Yeah, no, that's what I was thinking.
It's County Donegal.
Donegal.
Okay.
Yes. What's the most southerly county in the Republic of Ireland? You've already mentioned it.
Cork.
Cork.
All right.
Yes.
Okay.
How about what's the largest county in the Republic of Ireland?
Clare?
Not County Clare. It's a long way from Clare to here, but it's not Clare.
What county is Dublin in?
That is a very good question. I don't think it's County Dublin. I think it actually is in a regular county. But actually, that's Cork, too, is the largest county in the Republic of Ireland.
A trick question.
In which county is the very famous Blarney Castle?
Isn't that Cork?
Absolutely.
Yay!
Most famous way to go.
When in doubt.
You know, I've never been out of the United States of America except for to visit our friend to the north. And my wife has visited Ireland before. And when she got to first in line at Blarney Castle, she said, I'm going to pass. Apparently, it's never really washed or sanitized or anything. And everybody wants to kiss it. And people do other things to it at night. So,
lovely.
Yeah, so I don't know if the gift of gab is that important, besides the fact my last name ends in a vowel and I'm Italian, so I don't think I need to worry about that. What County Mayo town was featured in John Ford's famous movie, The Quiet Man? And for the record, this is the name of the town, not in the movie, but the name of the town where the movie was filmed. It's a very, very famous John Ford movie. I want to say, who was in it? Sorry, folks, I wasn't around during the 20s.
So on the west side or the east side?
I was in the West, I believe.
Was Galway?
County Mayo is in the West. You know, I think Galway is in Galway County. So this was a very interesting, well, how about I play it 80s style here? A very famous video game, the first appearance
Q-word.
Of the character Mario, and the second word of that two-word video game. Kong was the name of the city.
Kong?
Yes, that's right.
Kong?
C-O-N-G.
Oh.
Kong. We had Snag, you know, Canada, and
now
Kong, Ireland. Does anybody remember this movie,
no.
John Ford's The Quiet Man?
No.
That's going to make the next question really interesting.
Cork.
Yeah.
Go to the the default, right? The next question is, what was the town of Kong called in the movie? A very famous Gaelic word translated to English. It Dinoc. Ends. I'll give you guys a try. It's a three-syllable word. The third syllable is free. Starts with an I.
Innisfree.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good.
Well done, Beth.
It's been a long...
in Cork. That's the limit of my contribution.
Lucky Charms, about as far as I go. So I mean, it's like I'm done for.
Oh man, I'm trying to get these
magically delicious.
Yeah, I'm trying to get these visions of the classic Simpsons episode where Marge is very concerned that Homer and Bart are converting to Catholicism, and she has a dream about going to Catholic heaven versus Protestant heaven, and basically Catholic heaven is the Irish and the Italians and Latinos beating the snot out of each other, and Protestant heaven is people wearing V-necks and playing croquet.
It couldn't be as good as the South Park episode where they were learning about communion.
Very,
do you remember that
I
one?
Do. I remember this. Regale us, Professor Littlejar.
The nun is explaining to Cartman and company how communion works because they're afraid they're going to go to hell for some reason. I can't quite remember why. So she's explaining about the bread and the wafers, right, and the wine, and Cartman looks at her and he says, are you telling me Jesus was made of crackers? And that's always struck me as sort of, for one thing, that was the sort of question I had when I was 8, and look what happened to me, right?
My.
Look how I ended up. I'm just saying.
Oh my, with one question to go, we're going to have to wait for another show, but you guys are doing very well. Let's all say goodbye, Professor Oljar.
Cork.
Professor Roach.
Goodbye, Professor Oljar.
Yeah.
Professor Maggio.
Goodbye, Professor Roach.
Professor Finkenbein.
Goodbye, Charlie Brown.
Professor Boats.
Enough of this blarney.
Professor Chow.
Yeah, lucky charms to you too.
101 reasons to send questions to Ask the Professor. Reason number 12, instant fame. That's right. When your name is read on the air, thousands, no, hundreds of listeners across the country will hear it. How do I be famous, you may ask? Well, it's easy.
Send your questions to Ask the Professor, care of the Communication Studies Department at University of Detroit Mercy. 4001 West McNichols Road, Detroit, Michigan, 48221. Or email them to atp@udmercy.edu. We look forward to reading your questions on Ask the Professor.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Communication Studies Department in the College of Liberal Arts and Education, Briggs Building on the University of Detroit Mercy McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and technically directed by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo. Let's go, Red Wings!